Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 971. It's time for some corkboard action. So if you want your event or thing that you made with your own hands or brain on the corkboard, just send us an email at events@id10t.com like Derek Marconi, who writes, I have many collectible items up for sale and auction recently, comics, animation, figure patches, pins, clothes, and more. Running through the holidays, there will be flash sales, $1 auctions, and many autographed items for sale. In addition, there'll be sales on instrumentals, voice work, and other audio work. Many items I've collected over the years and currently being sold to help pay for family medical bills and treatment. Any sales, sharing, or browsing goes a long way and is helping me stay at home to take care of my wife since she has fallen ill. Thanks for reading and any viewing that may take place. All information links at Atomic Blue, that's OTTOMIC Blue, BLUE .com. Derek, I really hope I hope everything is on the mend, and we're thinking about you, pal. So please, big hugs to you and your wife, and again, support Derek. Clay Space writes, I just launched a sci-fi experience that blurs the lines between reality and fiction. Back to Earth is the story about a popular biotech implant people are inserting under their skin so they can connect to the internet. However, a bug has been discovered that is turning these users into zombie-like monsters. That's not far off, Clay Space. The chip maker is denying the bug exists, so we've created an immersive experience that has you hacking into back-end of the chip maker's website and sending emails, making phone calls, using cryptocurrency in order to discover the truth before it's too late. A graphic novel will be coming out next year, and our team is currently working to finance a TV show. Find it all on starfate.tech. Again, if you want your thing on here, events@id10t.com. This episode is Bridget Everett, who's one of the funniest fucking people. Bridget was on At Midnight a ton, and she killed every time. She may have won every time she was on. She is an incredible performer. If you ever get a chance to see her, you should. She's doing a series of shows in New York right now at Joe's Pub called Bridget Everett and the Tender Moments. Those shows are November 29th, December 4th, December 5th, and December 6th. Just Google Joe's Pub and go get tickets. It's actually publictheater.org, and then you navigate and you'll find Joe's Pub at the Public. So definitely go see Bridget live, either at those shows or if you have another opportunity to see her. You can listen to her podcast, Three Girls and One Keith, with Bridget, Rachel Feinstein, Keith Robinson, and Amy Schumer. And also she's on the show called Camping on HBO, which happens to star Jennifer Garner and David Tennant. So watch it on HBO or HBO Go or HBO Now. HBO Now! Just demand it. Just like a, now! I demand to see this HBO Now! Go! So this is the incredible and wonderful Bridget Everett on episode 971 of the ID10T podcast. Oh, also, her dog is Instagram famous. You should follow her incredibly adorable Pomeranian Poppy at on Instagram. Her account is Poppy_Louise, PoPPY_LOUISE. All right. Podcast.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
No, I saw the pup, and apparently the dog is quite the Instagram celebrity.
Oh, have you been briefed?
Well, I
briefed a little.
Just about the dog. I started I was gonna start posting more pictures of our cat, but the cat just doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
So then I started. On Snapchat, I just started drawing wieners on the cat, and they're like, "Well, the cat doesn't have to do anything. I can just draw dongs
on a kitty cat on Snapchat."
Yeah, on or near the cat, and but then I just decided, like,
And then at a certain point, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I'm like, you're in your 40s. Is this really what you should be doing with your life?
You know your friend Dan from the Dan Band, Danfinity?
Yes.
Are we rolling, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. He likes to draw dongs on things, and so do I, so.
I'm not... This is very much in line with the Danfinity that I know. Yeah. I don't know what it is. It's just something about... I enjoy the fact that the cat is just being a cat,
yeah,
and has no concept that I'm drawing horrible things on him. No concept. Yeah. Like, he's fine. But a complete spoiled asshole. How's your dog?
Oh, Poppy is an angel. She's a... Oh, she's perfect. Poppy_Louise on Instagram.com. She's like a rescue, right? So when I got her, she was like all trembly. And I mean, she's also a Pomeranian and she's beautiful.
Yeah.
But she just has always been like a sweet little lap baby girl. But she is a former sex worker, so she does. I get to go to Nashville next weekend to do some shows. And so my friend Murray Hill is going to come with me. I was like, I think she's from the streets of Nashville.
Yeah.
Or right outside of Nashville. So I want to go try to find her family and go to the... Is that too sad?
No, that's great.
Is it too deep?
See how they're doing. Are you going to bring her?
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing travel.
Oh, she goes everywhere. Yeah. When I sit in business class, sometimes, you know, they like come by and they try to check her because they think that she's a coat because she's so fluffy.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
And they try to stuff her in the overhead bin.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Did you
even believe that somebody allowed that to happen?
That's crazy.
I mean, even if you're the owner, I'd just be like, I'm getting off this plane. It's insane.
Yeah, because somewhere in your brain, you would have to run all the historical data and go,
yeah,
I've never heard of a dog being put in a bin before. But at some point, like that there was just no oversight in that person's...
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, okay, it seems fine. I don't know. But
that being said, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long the flight would have had to be for the doggy to drop. Do you know? Do you ever talk on these things? Do you just sit over there quietly?
I sit quietly.
Okay.
You know, Ashley, we don't do a lot of these in New York, and Ashley lives in New York. So Ash like books our East Coast guests.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And so, you know, she doesn't, but now is the opportunity.
But you guys know each other.
For years.
Okay.
For years.
This is just like...
So weird.
No, we met on this site that's like Tinder, but for podcast bookers.
Oh, okay, cool.
So we met for coffee and then she was like, okay, I would like to take this to the next level and book guests for your podcast.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
all right, nice.
Yeah, but Booker, B-O-O-K-R, I think was the
Booker.
App.
Com.
We gotta make that. That's a good idea.
What is
I
it like?
Love it.
What do they call it? Like, you know, like when girls get, well, some girls get drunk, like, hey, hooker. It could be like, hey, booker. I don't know. It's so dumb.
What are you doing in Nashville? What shows are you doing?
I'm doing the old Zanies.
Zanies is great.
I love it. You know, it's one of the first places I ever did, like, a comedy club. I went with Amy Schumer, and I was like, I was convinced that my act was not going to work in a comedy club. She's like, just trust me. And so we went to Zanies and Punchline in Atlanta.
Yep.
And that's how I got on the comedy club circuit.
How do you like it?
Comedy clubs?
Yeah.
I don't really like them. I like Zanies. I like I'll only go back to ones that I like because
right.
I just don't care enough about it. You know, like
yeah.
I can perform live in rock clubs in New York and that's
yeah.
enough for me.
Yeah. But so was cabaret sort of were those the seeds of live performance for you?
Yeah. Well that and karaoke, like real hardcore karaoke. I was wanting to be in, what was the one that you did with Dan? The not School of Rock. Why am I?
You mean,
Rock of Ages.
Ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wanting to be like in a show like that, but,
did you go to that?
To see it?
Yeah.
No, but I did want to.
It was really fun.
It
was fun when Dan was doing it. It was really, really fun.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, Dan's just a super fun guy, and it had a real loose vibe to it. And I never saw The Rock of Ages when it was on Broadway, but...
Were you guys a tour, or were you in...
We were just... We were in the first cast. Like,
okay.
We started the first cast in L.A.
Okay.
We're just doing it at rock clubs.
Yeah.
And then, and then it kind of blew up and, like, got fancy. And I was like, oh, I don't think I could sing 8 shows. Like, I can sing a couple shows.
Yeah.
But I'm not a trained singer. So I never did it. But I heard it got real fancy. Like, real Broadway.
Yeah, it did. Sean, are you friends with Sean Jeunesse, too? He's got that kind of voice.
No.
He's friends with Dan. Anyway, but I was like, my dream when I moved to New York was to be on Broadway. But now that I know that you can just do, like, 2 shows on the weekend and go back home, I'm like, why would I ever do that?
I mean, you can't do anything else if you're doing a Broadway show.
You can't. Like, you're a prisoner. And then also just, like, the vocal stamina and the physical stamina. There's something I'm, like, talking to somebody about doing on Broadway, and I was like, it's like a dream, but I'm really... was like, I don't know if I can punch a card that much. Like, I remember when Amy Schumer was doing, she did Steve Martin's play on Broadway.
Yeah.
And just watching her keep that schedule made me get into bed.
But I feel like it might be fun if you could do it for like a month or two. So you can say like, I did it, you know, I checked the box.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do it for like...
That's what the big stars do. Yeah. I want to do something. Patti LuPone and I are trying to work something out, and like, she could probably make that call, but I can never be like, oh, we're only going to do it for 6 weeks. But that's all I'd want to do.
How many live performance things do you... Because I know you have a band, and then you do solo stuff, and then you do...
Yeah.
How many different things do you do?
I mean, a lot. I just like... It's like... Because my career didn't sort of kick until my 40s, so it's like I'm just always hustling. You know, you can't ever shake that, you know, the hustle and the hunger. So I do really just everything I can, basically. I mean, I love saying no to stuff now because, like, I live on the top floor. I got a terrace now. You know, I could say no to a few things. But other than that, before that, I was in clubs every night. I was singing, you know, I do acting and writing and everything, you know, like everybody does, just to stay alive. And I got that dog in there who's on a organic fucking diet. She's at Just Food for Dogs in L.A., you know?
Just Food for Dogs.
Yeah, I saw some documentary about how they put, like, filler and all this nasty shit in dog food, and I was like, my little princess is not going to eat that shit anymore.
No. She needs food that's been checked by a scientist?
Yes, and a dick in her mouth drawn by a therapist.
Just, you know, because just to remind her where she came from.
Yeah, that's right. That's a horrible thing. Like, those, I mean, no wonder she's like, every time, like, a dog comes around, she just plants her ass on the ground because she's so afraid they're going to try to stick it in. Like,
no! Oh, you were serious about that?
I'm dead serious.
I thought we were just doing a bit.
Yeah, well, her life is a bit, so.
It just turned into an Oscar-nominated film about a dog overcoming, you know, like.
I want to make a movie about her, like, and, well, I shouldn't say what it is because somebody probably write it, but I want to write like her true story and like write songs and
there is zero reason why you should. That is a great you should absolutely do that. There's zero reason to not do that.
I saw that Isle of Dogs. Did you ever see that?
I did see Isle of Dogs, yeah.
And I was like, you can make sort of like an animated or like that kind of movie for adults. I guess there's other stuff like that exists, but you know, like I think like an animator, she's so beautiful, I'd want it to be like live action, but she's not an actress.
A really
she's not trained.
Fun, gritty, fucked up musical drama.
Yeah. Just, like Oscar caliber performances.
Yes. Yeah. With just like dog sex.
Yeah.
And dog crying.
Yeah, the
and
real
dog
fucking
drugs.
Like, oh yeah. And... Nicole Kidman, Skarsgård, fucking who else is hot?
Al
Pacino.
Pacino's in there.
Yeah, Pacino's in there. And you gotta get some young ones. You gotta get those two sisters. Who are the sisters? The Fanning girls?
Yeah. The Fanning's in there.
Yeah, the flashback Fanning girls where they're getting... Yeah, it's gonna be...
You gotta get Rooney Mara in there.
Rooney Mara, yeah. Does she have an accent? She does. She's from somewhere else, right?
No, I think they're from here. I think their dad owns a big football team.
Oh, they're rich.
Yeah. Like, mega. Mega.
Ashley's over in the... She's just nodding.
The Giants.
They own the Giants?
Yeah.
Wait, don't people have enough? Don't people have enough to eat? What about? I mean, shit.
I mean, if we're keeping score.
Wait, who was she? She was like the girl with the tattoo?
Yeah, the girl with the tattoo.
I could have done that.
You could have done that.
She could have sat at a fucking game and handed out flags for the football team. I don't know what...
You would have tattooed a dragon on your body.
I would, yes. I would do anything.
I honestly do believe that this... I'm not even kidding. This movie... would be groundbreaking. I mean, it could almost sort of be like, you know, tonally a bit like Hedwig, which was so beautiful. Like, there's a real beauty to it.
Yeah, I love that.
But
I
love
that show.
You see the struggle and you feel the, you have to do that. Please do that.
Oh, I love that you referenced that. I love that. That was like the first show that I fell in love with in New York, or one of them. I went to see it like 5 times. I saw Ali Sheedy do it, Donovan Leitch. I never saw John Cameron Mitchell do it, but I saw everybody else.
And
Michael C. Hall before he was Dexter, killing people.
That was pre-Dexter.
Yeah, and I think he was emceeing on Broadway and Cabaret. I don't know, do you listeners into musical theater?
Well, I wasn't, you know, I didn't, I imagine, were you musical theater in school?
Yeah, show choir, music theater, all that. And then I went to school for opera.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How do you keep your voice warm? Because, you know, I could sing a lot more when I was in my 20s and my 30s, and now my 40s, I sing like two songs and my throat's like, nope.
Yeah.
All done.
Well, I went to, when I was doing a show, somebody paid for me to go to like a really fancy voice coach. Because I studied opera so I could sing that way. But when I sing like rock and stuff, I would just always shred my voice.
Of course.
So I went to this woman who taught me all these like exercises. Like, this is like bullshit. You know, like somebody's paying all this money, but like I don't lose my voice anymore. So she teaches like Neil Patrick Harris and Hugh Jackman and like that guy from The Darkness. You know that band?
Oh, yeah.
That guy can sing.
Get your hands off of my woman. Like that guy.
Yeah. You can't.
Well, that's the shreddy rock voice is really fun to do, but I always worried like, oh, if I got real training, would you be able to, like, do you lose the shreddy rock voice? Is it more like, I want to know what love is? Like, do you still keep it?
I mean, the thing is like, you have to worry about longevity, you know, like, that's the thing, like, Patti LuPone, like, she, you know, she sounds better than anyone, and she's in her 70s, like, she takes voice lessons, she's like an athlete, she does all her stuff, and I don't know, I feel like when you listen to, who was I listening to the other day? Oh, that guy from Linkin Park. Rest in peace, sorry. But like, just that kind of like shredding.
Yes.
When I hear that, all I hear is like the vocal trauma happening.
Right.
So I know, yeah, I don't want to sound like sing-songy, but it's so important to just keep it alive. And I trash it that's why I can only sing like an hour and a half show. Because by then I'm just like, oh, it's starting to go. I got to go to the bar and drink four glasses of wine and let people talk at me.
And you're going to sterilize.
Yeah, I got to sterilize. Alcohol's
going to sterilize all that stuff out. When you're doing comedy clubs, how much of your show is music and how much of it is...
It's all. It's like the same. I just do it with tracks. I'm like, hit the track. I say that to my band too. But I do like, you know, 8 songs and then tell some stories and get involved. But like, I'm getting more and more nervous to go on the road with the style of show I do, because it's like interactive, and you know, I just feel like maybe I'm gonna stick to New York for a while after these Nashville shows.
Yeah, I don't know though. To me, you seem like such a fearless performer in the sense that, because you were always amazing on At Midnight.
I love doing that show.
Every time you came on, you destroyed on that show. And what's really fun and inspiring to watch is like, oh yeah, Bridget is just like, she's firmly planted. Like, you are so solid as a performer that I don't sense any, like, hesitation. No.
But I don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, for some, it's like the more, like, because, you know, the wilder and bigger you get. Like, I've definitely, like, toned it down. There was, like, I was doing some really crazy shit for a while. Like, when I was trying to get my career going. I was like, I did the show one time with, like, a razor and I, like, shaved some shit on stage. And my friend Murray Hill sat me down afterwards. He's like, all right, kid, you got to slow down. So I didn't go that far, but like, I still do a lot of crazy shit and I want to keep trying new things, but I just, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm getting older or something and I want to just, I'm afraid to sort of go too wild, you know, like in an unknown place. I feel comfortable doing it at Joe's Pub in New York because like that's my scene. I know people are there to see me, but I want to keep trying wild shit and, but do it somewhere where I feel safe.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you were talking about that now you say no to stuff, which is good, because when you, it's hard to get out of that place when you're young and hungry and you just want to work. And so you're just like, well, I can't turn stuff. I got to do everything. Yeah. You know, it is important to sort of realize where you're at and go, oh yeah, I don't think I need to be that anymore.
Yeah. I enjoy that. I enjoy sort of having a hold on it now, you know, cause like for a while I just felt like I would just do anything for anybody. I wasn't thinking of myself, you know, so I was just like always spent. I had no creative energy left. And now I do, because I can look out the window. Before, I was in a ground floor apartment. It was really dark and sad. Like,
and you literally did the opposite.
Yeah. No, it's like just sunlight. I got a beautiful dog. I got an iPhone. I got a seltzer machine. I got a golden diaper on the
You do have a golden diaper on the thing.
Yeah.
What is that from?
I used to host a show called Our Hit Parade, and we used to do this game called What's in My Diaper, and like, people would have to reach in your diaper but first guess what it was. Those were the wild
What
years.
Types of objects might have been in the diaper?
Oh, God, it could have been a book, it could have been a stack of CDs, it could have been gum, it could have been anything.
Was anyone really good at the game?
No.
But I've always been really fascinated by this, because... you know, stand-up, like the stand-up clubs, the stand-up circuit, and I think the cabaret circuit are definitely cousins.
Yeah, cousins of each other. Sure. Yeah.
Because there is that kind of like gritty, like, okay, we're just going to throw everything we can at you and, you know, all bets are off kind of thing. But I do... I was always envious of the cabaret scene because it definitely... The cabaret scene! Because it's so much more experimental and so much more unbridled, I think. Because stand-up, you can... I feel like you can try some stuff in a stand-up venue.
Yeah.
But you kind of... You still have to stay within some lanes. Yeah. And cabaret just seems like any fucking cool, crazy thing you want to do.
Yeah, it's lawless. And that's why I love it so much. And that's why I'm so happy I found it. Because when I moved to New York, I was like, oh, I want to be... on Broadway, I want to be in a musical. But then I found this, like, sort of, you know, there's like an old guard of cabaret where you're like singing and telling stories, and you know, and those people are great, but they want nothing to do with me. I'm involved with like the world of like Taylor Mack and Cola Scola and Aaron Markey and all these like really wild, weird thinkers, and Murray Hill and Champagne Jerry, and like people that you should look up if you don't know them. But they're just like, it's a really it's just like lawless and off the rails and like nudity and like just singing shit and saying what's ever on your mind, and it's expected, you know, it's like welcomed. And I feel like sometimes when I'm in a comedy club, like people just show up to see a show and they want to see somebody just like, you know, boom, set, spike, you know, like hear the set up the punchline and then like, and drink their two beers and go home. But it's more of an experience. I think cabaret is more of an experience. Like, you know, it's not always about like, super funny, but you get some money notes and in my case, some tits.
but also, I would imagine, there always has to be like some authentic, like I feel like the audience knows when something's not authentic. Like if someone just tries to do something that's weird for the sake of weird, does the audience get suspicious or do they get, like what's a bad show at a cabaret? How do you know if the
It's like anything else. I think you have to be like, you can be wild and weird, but if it's not like, Aaron Markey is this crazy sort of wild, I'm trying to think of how to describe her, but like if Amy Sedaris did cabaret with like meets Gilda Radner meets like Shecky Green, I don't know what that was about, what I just tried to come up with. But
I like it though.
But she's like a total wild, weird ride, but it works when you see her because you're like, that's who she is. But then I see people like trying to be like her, they're like, I'm from Brooklyn, I'm going to do some weird shit. And you're just like, but that's not you, so stop.
Right.
And I, you know, I go to things and like, I hate the feeling of like that expression punching down or whatever, you know, like I never want to do that. I really want to see other people from cabaret and like in downtown New York succeed, because to me it's such a thrilling, vibrant world and people do such crazy shit. But I also, if they're not really being true to themselves, then I'm not interested in helping them, which makes me feel like I'm kind of being a cunt, but, and I'm not like so wildly successful that I can do much for anybody, but you know, like I do try to do what I can and, you know, cause a lot of people help me out, you know.
Were you ever, did you grow up shy or were you always sort of, like?
No, I was like wild. I was like oversexed and weird and like doing naughty things, and just my mom and dad are really funny but both in very different ways and they hated each other and that added some fun. but like my mom like used to walk around like grocery stores in her nightgown with no bra and like her coat on and just like, you know, just like her own unique person. And like she would come home from work, take her bra off right away, and she's just super funny. She's a music teacher and weird. I think she thought we were like the Kennedys of Manhattan, Kansas, but we were not, you know. We were just like a bunch of hellions, and my brothers and sisters are all super funny. We used to sit around the Thanksgiving table and try to like make people laugh until either they cried or wet their pants. And so my sister would usually wet her pants and I would cry.
So in Kansas, I would imagine in the 80s probably?
Yeah. 70s, 80s.
Yeah, we're probably about the same age.
I'm 46.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, hey. All right.
Living our best life. 46. This is where it gets good. Yeah. Now, that was the other, was just a prequel. Yeah. This is the fucking main attraction.
Check out my Snapchat for more dicks later. All right. 46. Yeah. I don't even know how to use Snapchat.
I draw dicks on cats.
Yeah, do you have like a Snapchat channel? Is that how it goes? And then you just
I kind of let Snapchat go because it's Snapchat.
Is it over? I don't even know.
I don't know. It just, for me, it's like Instagram is
just available to out there. And Snapchat's a little more of a walled garden.
Yeah.
And so, and it's like you don't even really know who it's going out to, or I don't know. For whatever reason, it just wasn't as compelling to me. Nothing wrong with Snapchat. It was just me. But so now I got to put the dicks on cat pictures on Instagram, which is fine. But at that, and then you just reminded me that my wife said that a guy is trying to, there's a guy who was born in 1949, who his doctor said, you have the health of someone who's 20 years younger than you, so he's legally trying to get his age changed to say that he was born in 1969.
I saw that headline. I didn't click on it. I was like, this is some bullshit. Is this somebody that has a problem with people, like, with their genders? Like, I thought, like, it must be, like, somebody just being like, well, if somebody was, you know, born a woman and thinks they're a man now, then I can...
Oh, then I'm going to be born in 1969? No, it didn't read that way. It read it read like he really was like, I should be born in 1969 and not 1940. But also, like, we can just tell people you're born in 1969.
Yeah.
How often do you tell someone your age and they go, I'm going to need to see some legal documentation? I mean, it's socially.
Yeah.
I don't know. But in Kansas, was there in a pre-internet era, was there a support structure for the type of stuff that you were into? Like, what type of stuff were you into then? How did you get it? And who were your friends?
Well, luckily I had 5 older brothers and sisters, so I heard, like, a lot of cool music.
Nice.
Like, REO, Speedwagon, Air Supply, and, like, that was in one room, and then my brother was, like, into DeBarge and, like, the other room, and then my other brother was, like, into Bread and Cream, and my mom was into Manilow and Streisand, and so I heard a lot of music, but the only thing, like, we would watch Saturday Night Live, and I could do that because my brothers and sisters would watch it,
yeah.
And I remember seeing, like, Joe Cocker and John Belushi, and I was like, oh my god, and Debbie Harry, I saw her, but there wasn't really, like, a support structure. The support structure I did have is that my mom was a music teacher, so she really thought there was nothing wrong with, like, moving to New York and wanting to be a singer. She's like, yeah, go ahead. It's taking you 20 years. Fine. Go keep waiting tables. You're going to make it. Like, so there's that support structure. But I mean, other than that, it was just like show choir and keggers on the weekend. And that's sort of like you marry a kegger and show choir and you got yourself a rock and roll cabaret singer.
That's it. That's what happens. That's all the things who could come together.
I'm putting the wobble wedge back on the table. Listeners at home. Okay.
The table's a little bit wobbly. I really need to describe the rug that we're on.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. It's a kitty in a pile of pills.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things in my apartment.
So adorable.
I was on that Museum of Modern Art gift store website thing, and I saw these rugs, and I was like, what can I do with the rug with a kitty cat and pills? Well, I'm going to make it work. And I just bought it. And then so I got this round table to go on top of it. But this is the wrong size, so I got another one coming. But yeah, I just love it.
Does your act change for the type of venue that you're... I mean, like, I know you said you do songs in the comedy club, but tonally, are you exactly the same? Or do you shift a little bit for the cabaret crowd versus the...
Yeah,
like,
the cabaret crowd, I have my band, so I take time, and I, like... you know, I mix in some, like, tenderness and, like, some ballads, so it's not just slam, 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 slam. But, like, at a comedy club, I really try to keep it, like, raucous and vibrant and, like, jokes, 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 or not jokes, but funny. But that's why I love doing the shows in New York, because I can take my time and, like, tell some, like, meaningful shit and like, maybe do some of the political stuff. I'm not really a political person, you know, comedian or whatever,
right.
Like, you know. I wear a resist ring every day, and I hate Trump. You know,
and you're wearing a Ruth Bader Ginsburg pin.
Oh yeah, because you know I don't know when this comes out, but you know she cracked her ribs, and I've got like so much Ruth Bader Ginsburg stuff. Did you see her documentary?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, I was lit up. I was watching it with Amy Schumer, and we were high fiving, we were crying, and so I light like during the you know I have a Ruth Bader Ginsburg candle I light like whenever fucking something's going off the rails or when we had the elections the other night. I got her, I got Maxine and Mueller, and I just light them all up and just pray to something.
Have you ever met her?
I waited on her like years ago when I waited tables on the Upper West Side, not far from here, at Ruby Foo's on the Upper West Side, and she was there with like her whole family, and she was just as sweet and polite as she could have been. And
good tipper.
Yeah, I think 20%.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I remember she wasn't. I remember those people. I waited on Jerry Orbach one time. You remember Jerry
Orbach? Of course I remember Jerry Orbach.
Yeah, so I used to watch Law & Order, like back-to-back episodes, and then I would go to work. And then one time he came in and he sat in my section and I was like, holy shit. Like, this is like so meta or something. I don't know. And so I like brought him a free piece of cake at the end and just sort of sat there and watched it. And I was like, if you didn't tip me, that's okay. I don't care. It's Jerry Orbach. He's given me enough. But he was a good tipper.
He was a good tipper?
Yeah.
I'm glad that's where that story landed.
Yeah.
Because I was very worried he's going to be like, 5%. No, Orbach.
Richard Dreyfuss has a little work to do. But, you know, maybe he's come around.
You know what would be funny is if you did a podcast and just talked about who was bad.
Right.
Just put people on blast for being bad tippers.
Yeah, from this episode, we got Hey Booker, we got a movie, we got bad tippers. What else can we possibly
bad tippers talk is about? A great name for a podcast. That is great. Oh, I worked at Ruby Foods for a long time. Here's the scoop.
Oh my God, I did. I worked at the original PF Chang's in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh wow,
I know a lot of those. A lot of those athletes used to come in. There were some great tippers and some not great tippers. And then Ruby Foods, which was a hot spot for a while. I waited on Woody and Soon Yi. I've waited on Howard Stern. I've waited on Richard Simmons. I've done it all.
And as a performer, like, do you ever, if you're waiting on someone that you like, you know, do you give a little extra? Or do you like, oh, I want him to notice me? Or are you good at, like, I'm just going to leave him alone?
I tried to keep it, you know, like, chill. Like, I, you know, it wasn't any big deal. You know, we're just peers here. You know, I got the apron on, but we're peers.
No, I know. We know each other's struggle. Yeah. I know how it is.
But, like, if you ever would ever wait on Howard Stern, you'd be so excited because he's so polite and, like, he'd come with his daughter, and when I was working this other restaurant after Ruby Foods closed, because I opened it and closed it, 10 years of service, thank you so much. But Howard Stern was, like, always such a great tipper. He tipped, like, 50 on 100 or something like that.
Nice.
But it's nice to be able to do stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Why not have all, if you're going to have all that money, you might as well just,
you might as well share with people.
Might as well share with people.
Yeah, maybe, like, 10 years ago, before I was really working a lot, I went to lunch with Drew Carey, and we went to this diner. And I tried to be a big shot. And I wasn't really working at the time. And I'm like, I'll get lunch. And he goes, oh. And I could tell something was wrong. I go, what's wrong? And he goes, I like to tip him like $100. So can you? And it was like on a $20 thing. And he goes, can you? And I was like, okay, you get it. Like, I just couldn't. And we went to lunch recently. Or we went to dinner recently. And I went to grab. And the same thing happened. I go, I got it this time, Drew. I go, how much are you going to tip? He told me. I was like, that's how much I'm going to tip. It's fine now.
That's so
and
nice.
It just it sort of felt like, oh, I came full circle because I got to be at that level.
Yeah.
You know, for a night.
When I go out to eat with Amy Schumer, she's always like, no, because she's like, I'm going to leave a great tip, but she's going to change someone's life. I know that that's the case.
But that's good though. Like that's what you're supposed to. You know, like you got
it's good. You know, it's all. It's nice. You like see somebody like taking the check presenter. Like, thank you, ladies. Have a great day. And you see somebody walk over to the side station and just like, oh, just gently weeping. Like, it's like, what did you leave that?
Don't worry about it. Yeah, some stuff I found in the couch. And okay, all right. Jeez, gosh. I mean, is it? You know, do you think that being like stupidly wealthy is good, or do you think it's just it comes with weird stuff attached to it?
I think it comes with weird stuff. I mean, I know some, I'm sure, you know, we all know stupidly wealthy people, you know, like they're just like so successful and just like, I feel like it changes you, but you know, like I wouldn't want that responsibility. Like I wouldn't want, like right now I make enough money that I can send my mom like $1,000 or I can send her pay some of her bills or whatever. And like, she's like, what? Oh, you know, but people like my brother is not calling me and saying, well, you're going to kick in for my kid's tuition. You
right,
know, like,
right,
not,
right.
Like, where does it end? You know, and some of my wealthy friends, they have a really long breadline. And I just feel like it changes the dynamic of your world and your relationships. If it can.
Right.
You know, but,
and also probably affects the choices that you make and how you have to live. And you know, I mean, not like, I mean, I'm saying like, oh, you should really feel bad for rich people. But I just mean in the sense of, you know, like it does come with some stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Like Oprah is still, I don't know, I've never met her, but like she's, she's still relatable. People love her, but you know that she's sitting on a mountain of like diamonds and marble castles and like,
yeah.
And how, while she tries to, you know, she is like a warm, relatable person, but like how street really are you? Or how connected to the people you once were are you?
Well, for her especially, it's got to be hard because it's not like, even if she really wants to be like super connected with people, it's like she can't just walk into a Starbucks.
She can't.
Because anywhere she goes, people are going, oh my God! Like, it's just going to get like jumped by fans.
It's starting to rain. Is that okay?
Oh, I think it's going to add a nice ambiance.
Yeah.
we'll just lull people into sleep. Like, oh, it's a little sleep machine.
Yeah. I have a skylight. We're on the top floor now.
Having like a full balcony. Like, that's a full-size door to a balcony. Like, you don't have to climb out a window to get to that balcony.
It wraps around, too.
Jesus.
I know. I'm really sounding like I've really made it. I haven't. It's a rental. But, you know, I love it.
What are you excited about, like, as we're, you know, now that we're in this magical 46?
Yeah.
What do you feel like you know now at 46 that you didn't know before?
I mean, the main thing that, like, I'm excited about really fully having a realization about is to just not surround myself or work with people that aren't there to lift me up, you know? And like, and vice versa. Like, I'm not doing anybody any favors if I'm not like supporting them fully. Like, just the people, you know, I spent a lot of time in my 30s with like working with like an underminer, you know, like somebody was like jealous but I thought that that was what I was worth. So feeling like that I'm worthy of what I've earned is really invaluable, and I wish I knew that in my 20s. Because you see some people in their 20s, and they're so confident, they think, well, yeah, I deserve to fucking be here. You know, I deserve 2 Oscars by the time I'm 30, or whatever it is, you right. know what I mean? Like, or it just took me a long time to realize that, and it's a shame, because I think I could have done a lot more, you know? But there's still
I don't
time.
Know, though, but maybe it's, well, there's
what
a
do
ton
you think?
Of time.
What do you, like, how do you feel about that?
I agree with you, but I also think that it's kind of necessary to go through that period that you're talking about, because if you just had all the answers at 23...
Good point.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, that's kind of boring. And then also, where do you go from there? Yeah. I don't know. It just seems... It seems nice to have lived and made dumb mistakes and grown and learned because then you can't appreciate... You can't fully appreciate something until you've fallen and skidded on your face, you know, several times.
Which makes me feel so bad for these like younger people that like make mistakes with the internet now. It's like there's just like a black mark is like forever or something,
right.
You know, and I feel like that's so unfair because thank God there wasn't like a camera or like an Instagram story following me everywhere with all the shit I said in there. Truly.
Those of us who were full adults by the time the internet came around.
Yeah, thank God.
Just having that, like having a foot in each one of those worlds. But, you know, even as much of a social media person as I was since there was, you know, well, just an internet person since there was internet.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm sort of like, I don't know how I feel about, you know, being on it all the time anymore. And I don't know if that's just, I'm starting to sound like an old person or what, but I am appreciating the real world more than I used to. And
it's
think
nice.
That's better.
Yeah, it's so much better. Like, you know, just to... I like to go see like a lot of live shows. I like to go see. I don't get out of my house enough because like I'm in my phone or computer like fucking online shopping or whatever. But you know I've really made an effort to not go on like Facebook and not Twitter is like it's gonna give me a heart attack.
Yeah.
And I don't even tweet. I just retweet other people because I get too mad when I start to write something. Instagram I like because it's like pictures.
Yeah, just visuals, just pictures.
I follow a lot of cats and dogs and, you know, I'm into celebrity animals and rescue sites.
That's sweet.
It's a balance.
Nice.
But yeah, life is about the living. I love to spend time with friends. And now I got an apartment that I'm not ashamed of. I see a lot more people.
And also, I also feel like you, when you're young, you sort of just, your friend group is just sort of whoever is nearby.
Yeah.
And then when you start to grow up a little bit and you're like, oh, I can pick my friends?
Yeah.
And then you start, like you said, you just want to be surrounded by people who lift you up and support you. It's weird that I feel like it took me years to figure that out.
Yeah.
Like, that. It seems like, oh, well, you would just know to do that, but it's, I
you
feel
don't.
Like I had to learn that.
Yeah, it just took me way too long to figure it out. But you're right, it's just like, you're sort of slogging through life, and you're just like, but then like, once I I had friends like Amy, my friend Murray Hill, and all these people that just want great things for you. It took me like 5 years to adjust to like people that like are like, they really love me. What the fuck is wrong with them?
You know what I mean? Don't you know how dumb you are for loving me? What is your problem?
I know, but now I'm just so much happier and, you know, lighter in spirit, not in physical, but spirit.
Spiritual. Well, that's important. That's important though.
Yeah.
Because if you go down the other path, it's just like that sort of blackness in your soul just envelops you, and then you're just a bitter old person, and then it's over.
Yeah, then you're my mom sitting in a blue chair, chain smoking her cigarettes, and like just like not, you're shut in. But when she goes out, she gets so excited. We go to McDonald's, and she's like, "Hi, it's Freddie." "Oh, hi, Freddie. Pull around." You know, they know what she wants.
Oh, that's so sweet.
They hand her caramel frappuccino with whipped cream and shit going everywhere. And she's like, wildly diabetic, should not be having it. But I'm like, you know, live your life. You're 84. You might as well just...
She's 84?
Yeah. She had me when... Maybe she's 83, but... sorry if I exaggerated. But yeah, she had me when she was almost 40.
Wow.
Is that the math?
Yeah, that seems about right. Yeah, 38.
Your young parents? Your parents like...
My mom, yeah.
60?
No, they're not that young. I mean...
Teen bread.
My mom was in...
I'm listening. I'm just getting some more salt, so keep talking. Your mom was what?
Bridget just leaves. She's like, I'm just done with this. I don't want to be here anymore. It's raining outside.
I went to a show last night, and it was all you could drink Chardonnay, so I gotta stay hydrated.
All you can drink Chardonnay.
Yeah.
That sounds like an album title.
All you can drink
Chardonnay. Just a glass of Chardonnay on the front.
That's right.
That's the one
thing. That's a good idea. I gotta write a song today. Maybe I'll do that.
You gonna write a song? Okay, so the song today is All You Can Drink Chardonnay?
Yeah.
Okay, so how does All You Can Drink Chardonnay start?
Well, first of all, I gotta stop shaking. I'm like, right now, I'm on a caffeine... Like, you know, you probably don't drink. Everybody's clean in comedy.
Yeah, but that's the way it is now.
But, you know, I wake up with these Chardonnay shockers. You know, when all the sugar, like, rattles you awake. And then I had a coffee. And now I'm having seltzer, and I'm just all fumes right now. I'm like, and when you guys leave, I'm going to just stop trembling, and then I'm going to let my brain settle.
Yep.
And I'll get to work, because I'm in a songwriter's group, like adult people do.
I feel like that you've already said a lot of things that are a good place for the song to start.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, you wake up, you've got the shakes, you've got the caffeine, you've got the seltzer water.
Yeah.
And you're basically just biding your time to All You Can Drink Chardonnay.
That's right.
And every day can be All You Can Drink Chardonnay.
It really can be. I remember I did that. And it's on NPR. What's it? Terry Gross.
Yep.
You know, I did it. I was in this movie. It's like a small movie, and so we were talking about it. It's called Patty Cakes, which I loved being a part of. And then like we had the opening night party, and we just like fucking went off the rails. And like the next morning, I have to go talk to Terry Gross. You know, it's like it's NPR. It's like, you know, be on your toes, bitch. And I was like, not on my toes. And I just kept being like, yeah, you know, I'm drinking and blah, 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 drinking. And I think at some point she's like, I'm worried about you.
Like, oh, no.
I mean, she didn't say that. I mean, it was so thrilling to get to be on that program. But I should not have done it in the condition I was in.
You know, though, I feel like Chardonnay is appropriate for the NPR crowd.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, Terry, I just want to specify... It was Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay then.
I do have a bottle of Jaeger that I've never opened, because in that movie Patty Cakes, I talk about Jaeger, so Jaeger sent me a bottle with like my name embossed on it or whatever.
Oh, wow.
But I'm not gonna be doing Jaeger shots unless Ashley, do you want one? You gotta.
I have vague memories of. It's been a long time. It's been a long time for me, but I have vague memories of. I only ever drank beer really, but occasionally. If you want to kick it up and then it's like, let's do a shot. The Jaeger shot, I feel like it was like poisonous licorice.
Oh, yeah. It's hardcore, you know. But I like anything that sort of burns going in because you know it's doing its job.
Just kill all those germs. Yeah. That's going to burn coming out. Yeah. Oh, that's going to burn coming
out.
But
now instead of Jaeger, I do ginger shots. I try to do a ginger shot every day. It keeps me clean. Keeps me... So I don't get sick, so I don't lose my voice, so I can make some money.
Oh, yeah. You get the ginger and the Apple cider vinegar is really good for
it's
really good for the pipes.
There's a place in West Hollywood that like is like you go in there. I would see Cheyenne Jackson in there. He's very handsome. You know Cheyenne Jackson?
No.
He's an actor. He's gorgeous. Look him up. You'd be like, oh, he's gorgeous.
He's gorgeous.
But he he's always in there getting some juice. That's how he looks so beautiful.
That's and so. it's just solidifying his his taut skin to his...
he's more and more beautiful every day.
Yeah, it's because of the shots.
Because of the shots.
I try to... They say the worse the shots taste, the ginger shots, like the healthy shots, the more toxins are in your body. Is that true?
Probably.
Ashley, you just nodded.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at Cheyenne Jackson.
Oh, you were not.
I thought you were.
God damn it. You were having your own private Cheyenne Jackson moment over there.
I was sitting in my favorite restaurant in West Hollywood, Hugo's. You ever go to
Hugo's? Oh, yeah, Hugo's is great.
I love it. I would like to leave a nice tip there.
Leave a nice tip at Hugo's.
And I'm sitting there, and Cheyenne Jackson just like honks and waves. I've seen him more than I've seen my own mother in the last year.
It sounds like destiny.
Yeah, it does.
We're going to come back to do the podcast next year, and then Cheyenne Jackson's just going to walk out in
a
towel.
That's right. God, I hope so. I mean, I think he's like happily married to a man and has kids, but
You know what though? Cabaret.
That's a good song. You know what though?
That's a great idea for a song. Wait, can I pitch this to you?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what though is great because each verse is basically an impossible premise that you set up. It's like,
you know what though?
And then the counter argument about why you're so amazing and why you're gonna make it work out. Why you're gonna make it work out.
Oh my god, I'm an EGOT now. And you know what though?
And the very last line, you go through the whole thing and then you go, you know what though? All you can drink Chardonnay.
Yeah! There we go.
And then you're out. You have like 33% of a song.
Oh my
right
god, thank god you came into my life today. Otherwise I would truly just be like, Poppy, what now?
That was my what are we?
That could also be another song, Poppy
what
now?
It's a beautiful, it's almost a sad you light up my life kind of a song. I feel like the world needs more sad piano ballads. Just those 70s gut-wrenching where you could just hear, you know, now I feel like so much about pop music is about the vocal
the
vocal riffs.
The vocal masturbation.
That's exactly right.
It's not about consonants, okay? Can I get a little bit of diction in my pop music? What the fuck?
You don't get that sense anymore. Like, you would hear
Barry Manilow.
Or a Carpenter song.
Christopher Cross.
Or Bread. And you go,
yes.
Oh, I don't think he's okay. Like, you would really get the sense that something was wrong. Like,
I
want to really
be concerned. I want to be concerned about my crooners.
I want the kind of concern where you go like, I got to call them and make sure they're okay.
Yes,
someone
exactly.
checking on them? Because I'm a little worried.
Yeah.
I heard their diary, their private diary of this song, and I'm a little worried that something's off.
And I want them to sound like they're my mom. You know, like my friend, he doesn't like Karen Carpenter's voice because he thinks that she sounds matronly. And I'm like, yeah, and it's wonderful. I'm like, her voice is impeccable in my opinion.
And she has an insane range too.
Yeah.
She goes all the way down some songs.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I'm going to sing along. For all we know.
I watched a duet between Johnny Cash and Joni Mitchell because it was just her birthday.
Uh-huh.
And it was from, I guess from his show. And her voice was her range was insane. But then, thanks to everyone's buddy cigarettes, her voice like drops an octave like every decade and got lower.
Yeah.
But I love that's what a singer should be able to do. I think.
I agree, and like what I love about Joni Mitchell is that she like. She just like fully like has embraced like what her voice is now. She's like, yeah, I smoke and I sound like this now. And as opposed to like trying to still have that sort of like, not tweety, like, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah,
sort
yeah.
of fluttery sort
yeah.
of, like she obviously can't do it anymore, but she doesn't care.
And she just sticks in her lane.
She sticks in her lane, you know.
I'm so glad that you recognize too as a professionally trained singer. Mm-hmm. And I think it happened... sometime around, like, I think it was American Idol that sort of brought that that kind of like soul yodeling, like it's like being technically proficient doesn't mean there's have soul.
Yeah, it's no, it's like to me, like there's no connection to like the song, you know, like that for me is like what's exciting. It's like whoever, however they're singing and if they're rapping or whatever they're doing, it's like that they feel it, you know, that's what matters. I hate when you're like watching somebody sing and they're just like, they're moving their hands all around because they've seen like Mariah do it or Christina do it. But they're not thinking about what they're saying. And like Whitney was like a great example of how you can do all those things. Like, you know, she just, her voice was just one in a million, you know? Yeah. But I think once Whitney really commanded pop music, like a lot of people that heard her felt like they had to do the same thing, but it's not necessarily who they are. You know? Yeah. Watching American Idol, it's just like, I remember seeing them. It's like, oh, all they're doing is just like fucking singing these runs and stroking their clit. They're just like, oh my God, did you hear that?
I don't know if I ever saw that on American Idol before. Was that a specific...
Unless you're Fantasia, who can do whatever the fuck she wants because she fucking kills it. Have you ever seen her on the Tonys singing the song from The Color Purple?
No.
She is so overcome at the end of singing it that she just has to dash off the stage. She is just so...
I love the Tony Awards. Oh, and I don't even have to see most of the shows. But what I love about the Tony Awards is that, like, all the other shows are just so serious and mostly full of seat fillers.
Yeah.
And so that's why the crowds don't always respond, because the crowd...
I've never been, but that's what I heard.
The crowd's always changing up. But the Tonys, it's like everyone wants to be there.
Yeah.
And they're excited about it.
Yeah.
And they're invested in it.
Yeah.
And it's just such a fun... It's a fucking great show.
Maybe because they only get one. And, you know, like... And, like, actors are like... They have the Golden Globes, the Emmys, the this, the critics, the this. And they're probably just worn out, you know? Too many dresses. I gotta look beautiful too many times. I gotta say thank you to my agent too many times. I'm tired.
Well, I think theater is more of a community. Much more of a community. And it's a localized community.
Yeah.
And, you know, film, television, people all over the place. It's not all the same thing, so...
And there is something about, like, you know, when people say when you do a musical, you fall in love. Like, you fall in love with everybody in your cast. You're like, I'm going to know these people for the rest of my life. And you're, like, crying on closing night and shit like that. In a movie or TV, you're just like... You do, like, a love scene with somebody you just met 20 minutes before. And you're like, okay, let's go. But it says I'm supposed to put my head in. Oh, okay, here we go.
All right, we'll
and
see
you once. Bye.
Oh, hey, I remember you, didn't I? Oh, yeah, didn't we do that? The sort of, I'm thinking about like what other versions of that clit stroking you were talking about is like if you were an architect.
You ought to see Poppy Snapchat. Poppy's just over there stroking her clit. Sorry. Okay, Poppy, what now? More clit stroking Snapchats? Okay.
Sorry,
I cut you off.
Poppy Clit Tuesday. Where it's just Poppy Clit all day long. All day.
Poppy Clit.
You got another song. Poppy Clit is a song.
It is a smash hit.
I was trying to think of, like, in other professions, the same version of that. It's like, you don't have to hit every little tremolo thing. It's like, if you were an architect, and you just put every detail in a building that you could possibly think of, like, look, I put every detail. But, you know, there's artistry in knowing what not to put in.
Yes, yes, you know? There's artistry in knowing what to not put in.
But I think that's also just part of it is that when the musical competition shows... A lot. Most of them are like newer, young singers, and so they haven't learned that yet. But then that's what's being popularized.
Yeah.
So everyone just goes, "Oh, that's what a good singer is." But if you listen to like Billie Holiday or Etta James or Karen Carpenter, it's like they're
not trying to copy.
They don't
anyone.
Do all that stuff.
Right.
Like you can hear or Patsy Cline, like you can hear or Dolly.
Yeah,
you can. I mean. One of my favorite videos, and I probably watch it like five times a year, is from 1985. It's Kenny Rogers singing We've Got Tonight, the Bob Seger song. And then halfway, he's in this massive arena. It's peak Kenny Rogers. And Dolly Parton comes in halfway through. And, you know, obviously Kenny has a great voice, but it's like he and Dolly are not even on the same fucking
Dolly,
solo system.
Yeah, Dolly is in her own... She's orbiting around. There's her. There's Aretha... There's like Whitney.
And it's just so, the thing that's so fun to watch, and I saw it once, I've seen Ann Wilson perform a couple times, and it's just, it's effortless.
Oh my God, her and the Kennedy Center Honors with singing Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And he's up there just...
Just crying. Just
wiping away the tears.
Yeah, because she's crushing it.
She's crushing it. And then like all the hats, you know, when they all wear the, because the, what's his name, John Bonham, was that his name?
Yeah.
And then his son's there, and the chorus comes out, and they're all wearing those little hats we used to wear. And then she's singing, and she just, oh my God, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking
and
about
it. And you look at her face, and there's no, like, she's just as calm as if she's having a conversation.
Yeah.
That's a whole other level. I don't even know if
she just knows. But the heartbreaker is, heartbreaker. Talking about heart.
Oh no!
God, that was.
Oh, I thought you were going to start talking about Tom Petty. I thought that's the pun we were going.
No. The heartbreaker, as you may or may not know, that Anne and Nancy aren't speaking to each other.
What?
Anne and Nancy Wilson are not speaking to each other.
I didn't know that.
Because that, you know, heart is like such a. I love two sisters together doing something.
I saw them at the Greek. I saw Heart at the Greek like maybe 15 years ago.
That must have been good.
Oh yeah, and to this day. And I didn't really pay... I mean, I remember the song from the 80s, but the song Alone...
Oh, yeah.
But seeing it live...
Ah!
It's just like that fucking Memorex ad where the guy's in the chair and the hair's blown back. I mean, it's... She's unbelievable. And it was one of my favorite concert experiences of all time.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
I gotta find the song. There's a Heart song from an album that they did. Hang on a sec. Let's see.
Barracuda.
No. It was a Zeppelin cover. They did it was a Zeppelin cover.
Robert Plant. Why couldn't I think of his name? Or is it Roger? Robert Plant.
Roger. I'm Roger Plant.
I'm Roger Plant.
I'm Robert's brother.
Can you imagine?
Hang on.
No, I'm Roger.
I'm the manager, Roger Plant.
If you're the twin of Robert Plant and your name is Roger, I'm just like, oh my God, Robert Plant? So excited to meet you.
Oh,
I'm Roger.
I'm Roger. Come from the land of the ice and snow. The hammer of the gods. Drive our ships to new lands. Here we go. It's the Battle of Evermore. Have you heard this?
No, I think so. Did they do this at the Greek?
No. This was just from some live album from 1996.
Effortless.
And they come in together. Now they come in together. That just, it's upsetting
how
good
that
is. It's upsetting how good that is. And the fact that they're not speaking.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker.
Well,
God, I did it again!
Come on! You knew the first time!
I know.
You did it again! Maybe you should write a song about how they just need to work out their differences.
That's true.
How can you mend a broken heart? Come on!
Oh!
See, we're all doing it now.
Did you like that one, Ashley?
What's a song? Is there a song to you that you feel like is uncoverable? What makes a good cover? Because I've heard some... when I hear like a what I call like a lazy cover, where it's like where a band where it just feels like, oh, you just want to hear, you just want to do a karaoke version of that
exactly.
song, as opposed to when someone like really takes like pulls something really magical out of a song and makes it their own.
One song I would say nobody should ever cover is "Mandy" by Barry Manilow.
Sorry, kids. I know everyone's glamoring, but put away your Mandy covers, and we're about to tell you why.
But there's other songs, like one of my very favorite songs is "Be My Baby," you know?
Yeah.
Be my little baby. I could hear a thousand people sing that because it's such a perfect song, such a perfectly crafted song. But so is "Mandy," but it's like, it's just not meant to be sung by anybody other than Barry.
Right.
But like, that's such a good question. I don't really want to hear anybody else sing anything that Aretha does.
No, I guess you really can't.
Because like, they try, unless they're going to do it totally different, or like, you know, like in a, like if like, you know, Jennifer Lewis, like if she sang, or Jennifer Hudson can cover whoever she wants. She's got a nut. She's an incredible.
What about
voice.
For you? Is there a song? Is there a song for you that you feel like, I want to tackle that one, but I don't know.
Well, the reason Barry was on my mind is because I did the Tonight Show last night. So
how'd that go? How was the Tonight Show?
Pretty good.
You did pretty well on that show.
Yeah, not yet.
I mean, it was bad.
But they, like, every time I'm on it, they want me to sing, and I can't really sing my original songs because it's like, you can't say titties on Tonight Show or whatever songs I have. And so I was just trying to figure out, I was like, oh, I kind of want to do like a Barry Manilow thing, like have a whole whatever. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, it can't be done. First of all, there's so much production value in it. There's like backup singers and whatever. So I sang Rihanna, and I think she's fair game. I think you can cover Rihanna.
You can cover Rihanna, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love her. I think she's great. And I love, like, you know, her, like, getting political now.
But Manilow.
But Manilow. You gotta just, like, he's his own thing.
How do you know, just for people as we're sort of winding this down, for people who... Because I think one of the things that we talked about besides Poppy Puppy Clit Tuesday...
Yeah. Always a Tuesday.
This is for your script. Yeah. This is just all for your script. It's all for your script. But I feel like a lot of also what we talked about was, you know, just figuring out who you are, being comfortable with who you are, being authentic, not trying to be someone else. We talked about that with cabaret, with stand-up. But when did you really start figuring it out? And how? Like, how would you tell people to start figuring out if they all of a sudden go, oh wait, maybe I am someone who copies someone else on stage. How do I know who I am? Is it, do you just have to live a while longer, or is there an easier way?
I think you gotta live your way through it, you know. But the truth is, like, so the golden diaper on the wall. It's a good reminder, because I used to do the show called Our Hit Parade, and it was like we would cover pop songs, and that was the whole thing, and like it was really wild. But it was also a time of discovery, you know, like figuring out like my voice, like by covering other people's music. And so anyway, around that time, I started my own band, and Adam Horovitz, Ad Rock from Beastie Boys, was in it. And I was like, you know, I want to make an album, and I want to do like, I'll just, you know, make an album of like cover songs that I've done that have been great at our Hit Parade or whatever. And he's like, no, you got to write your own music. And I was like, but my ideas are silly. And he's like, the Beastie Boys, you know, Beastie Boys music was all silly in the beginning. And, you know, like, he's like, do you. And so that's when I started writing songs called What I Gotta Do to Get That Dick in My Mouth. Because it made me laugh. So instead of trying to be, like, smart and sophisticated, I did something that gave me joy. And I was like, and it's like, you know, it took me so long. But, like, once you are saying what you want to say, then it's going to make so much sense. Everything gets easier. More people want to hear what you have to say. That's the key for me. So
yeah, especially because I think when someone seems like they are comfortable in their own skin, other people are like, what's that person know that I don't know? Like, it is a very, like, being comfortable in your own skin, and you can't force it, but being comfortable in your own skin is an incredibly attractive quality, because it's what everyone wants to feel.
Yeah.
most of the time. That's why they distract themselves constantly, because they don't feel comfortable in their own skin.
And that's like sometimes if I get like a call to do like some like big audition or big meeting or whatever, and I know it's not me, I'm like, I won't do it, because it distracts me from, then I'll go into a tailspin of like, I'm not good at this. You know, like I just want to do things that make me feel confident and strong and powerful and like I'm doing right by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Adam always do. He'd be like, do you? And I think, you know, it's working for them, so why can't it work for me?
It worked pretty well for everyone. Yeah. And then lastly, what is the craziest...
What's my number? It is. I am single.
646.
That's 1-800-POPPY-CLIP.
So the phone company trying to get those numbers. Is this available?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, sir. What did you say?
It's not.
It's a movie I'm writing. Yeah. Don't worry about it. What's the craziest thing that you've ever that you can remember doing on? Like, what's your craziest cabaret night memory?
Well, one of them was I was going around the room and I sing the song called Titties, and I was like, and I hate when people show up to my show late. It like makes me insane because we're already starting late. So like I'm going around the room and like motorboating people and I turn around and I see this table, like somebody had, like while I was facing this way, had just filed in and sat down, and I turn around and I go to motorboat this person because I was like, fuck yeah. And it was Gloria Steinem, and I was like, oh, that's exactly what I did. I was like, stop the music. Gloria Steinem's here. Gloria Steinem's here. Gloria Steinem's here.
Did you?
And she'd come like right from like something with Oprah. Like she had a good excuse to be late. Not that anybody needs an excuse to be late. It's their money. They can do whatever the fuck they want. But like, that was a moment that really, truly stopped me in my tracks. And it took me like 5 minutes to get back, you know, just... in my to take the night back over.
So you did not motorboat her?
No. But I would.
If you those are
she's hot, by the way.
Yeah.
She is hot. She looks good. I was at a party and she was out on the dance floor and I was like, Gloria.
That's fantastic. And it also a good reminder of like, because I would imagine not many things can throw you. You probably like,
most things you just sort of ride out.
You just sort of roll with.
Yeah.
But when you're about to motorboat Gloria Steinem.
Yeah, that'll stop you dead in your tracks.
Then you...
Every time.
Does Poppy say anything? Does Poppy sing?
She's prepping her clip right now.
She's prepping it?
Yeah, she's prepping it.
Prepping it in like a... like with the garlic and butter, or I don't know, what do you mean she's prepping it?
She's got ginger root over there. Just she's soaking it in apple cider vinegar, and then she just sort of like lightly pats it with the ginger root, and then she tucks it away for a little bit. Then she brings it out.
Just need to let the listeners know she was doing the space work of like a mortar and a pestle.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Like, I don't know those big words. I don't have time for those big words.
I don't have time. I just know what it is that she does.
Yeah.
I don't have time to name everything. Yeah. I just know she's putting ginger root on her puppy clitoris, and we're going out after, okay? Is that okay?
Oh, it's okay.
Is she in your live show?
Yeah, I wrote her a song. It's a love song.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here in your own apartment.
Thank you for coming to my
apartment.
Thank
you for having me in your fancy penthouse. It's PH. It's PH on the elevator thing.
But it's a rental.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't
matter. I'm not gonna apologize. I've earned this.
Yeah, you don't have to own, you know, like... If I lived in New York, I wouldn't fucking own an apartment. I would rent a place.
Yeah.
Yeah, this place is great.
Thank you.
Well, you've earned it, and I'm so glad to see you happy and that you're doing so well, and I think the world of you. I loved having you on at midnight every single time, and I was so glad you wanted to do the podcast.
And thank you for always being so sweet and generous on your show at midnight. You always really made me feel very welcome.
Oh, please, no. I love funny people, and you're fucking hilarious. So it was...
If I had a show like that, I'd be in my dressing room fucking prepping my own clit and wouldn't talk to anybody.
I mean, I did prep my clit quite a bit. But it's just I'm a good time manager, so it's like I was able to prep it.
I knew that about you.
Yeah, and still be able to get, you know.
You got your shit together.
I do. Like, yeah.
You're somebody that has their shit together.
Yeah, I have a special clip prep calendar in iCal. It's pink, of course. It's really just about time management. Yeah, that's all it is.
Oh my God, I'm so happy. I was like afraid that I was going to, there was a moment where I was laughing. I thought I was going to let out a little fart, so I'm glad that didn't happen.
I don't think anyone's farted on the podcast before.
Yeah, you mean Quentin Tarantino didn't?
If he had, I didn't notice. But maybe he did. I'm sure some silent ones have leaked out.
Oh, yeah.
Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I haven't.
You would never be like, hey, did you just drop a stink?
Yeah, exactly. Was that you? Jodie Foster, did you do that?
Oh, Jodie Foster. Yeah, you've had some. Sorry, really. You're dipping down low tonight.
No, today. We are up in the fucking penthouse, as a matter of fact.
It was an honor to have you on, Bridget
Thank
Everett.
You for
Thank
me
you
on.
So much.
Thank
and,
you.
And enjoy your burrito.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.